Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Today, we're embarking on a deep dive into, well, a really groundbreaking scientific study. It challenges some pretty deeply held assumptions about a common childhood illness. Okay, picture this, a common childhood condition, right? One that's been steadily increasing, going up and up for decades now. What do you think is driving that rise? You know, is it our environment, changes in our genes, or maybe something else entirely? We're talking about childhood onset type 1 diabetes. Its incidence has been climbing worldwide since like the 1950s, increasing by maybe 3-4% every year. That's not a small shift. It's a really significant global trend. And it's frankly perplexed researchers for years. Now, conventional wisdom often points the finger at, you know, our changing environment, our diets, maybe early life exposures, things like that. But what if the story is much more complex, maybe even counterintuitive? What if the thing we thought was driving this trend? What if it's actually been remarkably stable all along? Today, we're going to unpack a study that sheds new light on this exact question. It challenges some long-held beliefs and honestly forces us to reconsider where we should be looking. But before we get into the fascinating details, we really want to recognize the incredible minds behind this work. Today, we celebrate the work of Yuxia Wei, Thomas Anderson, Shengxin Liu, Maria Feichting, Ralph Kujihalkola, and Sofia Carlson from the Karolinska Institute in Sweden. They've really advanced our understanding of the changing influences on childhood onset type 1 diabetes. Okay, let's unpack the central scientific debate here. We know type 1 diabetes incidence is rising globally, but what's been the main hypothesis explaining this?
Well, the core problem has been, it's been pretty unclear. Is this global increase in childhood T1D because of rising environmental risk factors?
Mm-hmm.
Non-genetic ones? Or is it maybe increasing genetic susceptibility in the population?
Yeah.
Or, you know, perhaps some complex mix of both.
Right. And when you see a disease increase that rapidly, it feels natural to look at environmental changes first. Why was that the dominant idea for so long?
That's true. Environmental explanations have generally been favored. And the reasoning, it seems pretty sound on the surface. It just seems highly unlikely that the genetic makeup of a whole population would change so drastically, so quickly, you know, in just a few decades. Plus, you see these big differences in T1D incidences, even between populations that are genetically quite similar. Think about Finland having a much higher rate than, say, Estonia, even though they're geographically and ethnically pretty close.
Yeah.
That points to external factors, right?
Sure, that makes sense. So what specific environmental factors were kind of on the radar? Potential culprits or maybe even things that protect against it?
Yeah, several stood out. For instance, the rise in T1D happened alongside the rise in childhood obesity. That's often proposed as a risk factor, though the causal link is still debated. Other early life things often discussed include maternal smoking, which, interestingly, has sometimes been suggested as potentially protective, believe it or not. Also, higher maternal age at delivery, that's seen as a risk. And breastfeeding, generally thought to be protective. The big question has always been, you know, how much have changes in these factors actually contributed to the overall rise in T1D?
And key to this study is the idea of heritability. Could you break that down for us? What does it mean here and why is it so crucial?
Right, heritability. In simple terms, it's the proportion of the variation we see in a disease like T1D. How much of that variation can be explained by all the genetic factors combined? It's not about whether you specifically will get it based on genes, but about how much of the difference between people who get it and people who don't within a population is down to genetic differences. For T1D, studies have estimated heritability to be pretty high, actually, somewhere between, say, 50% and 88% in different groups. A recent Swedish study put it at 81% in kids. Now, this is crucial because, well, if environmental factors are really the main drivers pushing incidence up, then you'd expect their relative contribution to increase over time. And logically, heritability should decrease. So the key question this study asked was, has T1D heritability actually changed over the last few decades? Because as far as they knew, nobody had really looked at this comprehensively before.
That's a massive question to tackle. And speaking of genetics, I remember reading about HLA genotypes, HLA human leukocyte antigen genes, right? Key for the immune system. Certain versions are known risks for autoimmune diseases like T1D. Did those earlier HLA studies give any clues?
They did, yeah.
Yeah.
Some intriguing hints. A study in Australia and similar findings came out of Finland, Sweden, the US, UK. They found something kind of counterintuitive. The proportion of T1D cases with the highest risk HLA types actually decreased from the 80s to the 2000s. Meanwhile, the proportion with intermediate risk HLA types went up. So it suggests the HLA contribution shifted, but didn't necessarily lessen the overall genetic risk. It just changed which genetic profiles were most affected, maybe. And it's important to remember, HLA genes only account for about half the total genetic risk for T1D. There's still a lot more genetics involved.
Yeah.
So moving to their methods, what really makes this study stand out is how they approach this. They built their analysis on an incredibly solid foundation. Their goal was clear: figure out if environmental and genetic influences on childhood T1D, specifically kids age 0 to 18, have changed in Sweden over the last 30 years.
30 years. That's a really comprehensive long-term view. What made their data so special for this?
Oh, the data set is genuinely remarkable. It was a nationwide study using Swedish registers. They linked data from, get this, almost 3 million children born between 1982 and 2010. It's actually the world's largest nationwide multi-generation register. And this allowed them to link full siblings.
Ah, siblings. Okay.
Yeah, which gives you this incredible ability to control for shared family factors, both genetic and environmental. It's a goldmine for this kind of research, truly.
Wow. Okay, so how did they actually track the T1D diagnoses in such a huge group? How did they make sure they caught everything?
They were really meticulous. Kids were followed from birth until age 19, or until they immigrated or passed away, with data going up to 2020. They used multiple sources to identify cases, the National Patient Register, the National Diabetes Register, even the first prescription for glucose-lowering drugs. Very robust. And they categorized T1D by age at diagnosis 2, 0, 6, 7, 12, 13, 18 years to see if patterns differed by age.
Okay. And calculating that crucial heritability number across all those people over time, what was their method?
They used something called an AE model. That stands for additive genetic factors plus non-shared environmental factors.
Yeah.
It's powerful because it tries to isolate the direct genetic contributions, separating them from environmental things that siblings don't necessarily share. It gives a cleaner look at heritability. And they base this model on an incredible number of sibling pairs, over 1.5 million pairs of full siblings.
Wow.
Yeah. And they specifically looked for what they called moderation effects of birth year. Basically, did heritability change depending on when you were born? That's key to their main question.
Makes sense. And beyond the genetics, what environmental factors did they pull from those registers?
They looked at a whole range of factors already linked or suspected to be linked to T1D. Things like maternal smoking during pregnancy, maternal BMI, any infections the mother had during pregnancy. Also gestational age, birth weight, C-section versus vaginal birth, even parental education level. They cast a pretty wide net.
That sounds incredibly thorough. You mentioned the sibling comparison design. That seems really important for teasing things apart.
Absolutely. The sibling comparison is really powerful here because it helps control for all those unmeasured things, genetic factors, environmental factors that siblings share because they grew up in the same family. It gives you a much clearer picture of the direct link between an individual exposure, like maybe maternal smoking, and T1D risk, separate from all that family background stuff. They also use standard Cox models for tracking incidence trends over time.
Yeah.
And these things called causal mediation models.
Okay, what do those do?
They help quantify how much of the increase in T1D could actually be explained by changes in how common those specific environmental factors became. And they even did a simulation study. They asked, okay, what should heritability look like if this entire rise in T1D was only due to environmental changes? That helped put their actual findings in context.
Right, the what-if scenario. Okay, so they laid all this groundwork, used this incredible data set. What did they actually find? Let's start with the incidence trend itself. Did it match what we thought we knew?
Pretty much, yeah. The incidence of T1D nearly doubled in Sweden for kids born between 1982 and 2000. So for those born in 82, the cumulative incidence by age 19 was about 0.5%, 0.50%. But for kids born in 2000, it jumped up to 0.93%.
That's a huge increase in less than 20 years.
It really is.
Did that steep climb just keep going, or did something change?
That's the interesting part. It didn't keep climbing at that rate. For children born between 2001 and 2010, the incidence actually plateaued, leveled off. This increasing trend, followed by the plateau, was seen across all the age groups they looked at, though maybe a bit less pronounced in the oldest teenagers. And that pattern matches other studies from Sweden and places like Finland, too.
Okay, so the incidence doubled then flattened. Now, the big one, the heritability results. This is the core finding, right? The potential game changer.
Exactly. This is where it gets really interesting. First off, the overall heritability of T1D across the whole study period, they estimated it to be very high. 0.83. That's 83%. But here's the kicker, the most striking, maybe counterintuitive finding. that heritability remained remarkably stable. It hovered right around 0.8 across the entire observation period.
Yeah.
So, for example, it was 0.80 back in 1982, 0.83 in 2000, and still 0.83 in 2010.
Hold on, let me make sure I've got this. The number of cases nearly doubled.
Right.
But the proportion of risk explained by genetics, the heritability stayed basically the same, around 80%.
That's exactly what they found.
That completely goes against the idea that changing environmental factors were the main thing driving the increase. Because if they were, heritability should have dropped, right?
Precisely. It directly contradicts that expectation. If new environmental factors were piling on risk, the relative importance of genetics should have gone down, but it didn't. They also found heritability was a bit higher in the youngest kids, 0-6 years old. It was 0.85 there. But crucially, even within those age groups, it stayed stable over time. And remember that simulation?
Yeah.
It showed that if the rise in cases, about 40 extra cases per 10,000 kids between 82 and 2000, if that was all due to environment, heritability should have plummeted to around 0.59, maybe 59%.
Wow.
But what they observed was stable, around 0.83. That stable high number really challenges the environment-only explanation.
Okay, so if heritability stayed stable, what about those specific environmental factors they tracked? Did they find any link? Did their changes explain any of the rise?
They did find some associations, yes. In the full cohort analysis, maternal smoking during pregnancy seemed protective. Higher maternal age of delivery was linked to higher risk. Also, maternal bacterial infections during pregnancy, gestational age, mode of delivery, extremely low birth weight, those showed associations too. However, that sibling analysis, the really powerful one.
Right, controlling for family factors.
Exactly. It suggested that the link they saw with maternal BMI during pregnancy might actually be due to what we call familial confounding.
Meaning
it might not be the BMI itself, but other factors, genetic or environmental, that are shared within the family that are really driving that particular association.
Okay. That's a critical difference. So, bottom line. When they looked at the changing prevalence of these known factors over time, like fewer people smoking, mothers being older, how much of that near doubling of T1D incidence could they actually account for?
And this is the crucial point. Very little. When they quantified it, the changing rates of maternal smoking and maternal age explained only a tiny fraction of the increase. Specifically, about 3.2% from smoking changes and only 0.8% from changes in maternal age.
Oh.
Childhood overweight and obesity contributed a bit more, but still small numbers.
Yeah.
Maybe 2-4% in boys, 1-2% in girls, depending on the estimate.
So adding it all up?
Adding it all up, these known environmental factors, even the ones whose prevalence changed significantly over those decades, explained less than 10% of the massive rise in T1D they observed.
Less than 10%? Wow.
Yeah. It really points towards something else driving the bulk of that increase. So if you connect this to the bigger picture, these findings are really quite profound. That consistently high and stable heritability happening at the same time as incidence doubled. It directly challenges that widely held idea that the known environmental factors are the main drivers. It strongly suggests that the proportions of T1D risk explained by genetics versus environment have stayed pretty much the same in Sweden over the last 30 years. That's a big shift in thinking.
It really is.
Yeah.
So if the genetic contributions stayed stable proportion-wise, and the usual environmental suspects explain less than 10% of the rise, we have this paradox. Incidence went way up, but our standard explanations don't cut it. The paper proposes this really interesting idea, this decreased combined load hypothesis. What exactly does that mean? How does it try to square this circle?
It's a really intriguing hypothesis. Essentially, they suggest that the total combined load, the sum of genetic risk and environmental risk needed for a person to actually develop T1D, might have decreased over time.
So, like, the threshold for getting the disease got lower.
Exactly. The bar has been lowered, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Even though the overall genetic predisposition in the population hasn't fundamentally changed in its relative importance.
Okay, so how could that happen? Is the idea that something in our modern environment is making it easier for people with maybe just moderate genetic risk to tip over into developing T1D?
That's precisely the implication. The hypothesis is that the penetrance of moderate risk genes, particularly certain HLA genotypes, might have increased over time.
Penetrance being the likelihood the gene actually causes the disease if you have it.
Correct. So this increased penetrance is thought to be driven by an increasingly diabetogenic environment, whatever that involves.
Mm.
This means kids who have maybe only a moderate genetic risk, kids who perhaps wouldn't have developed T1D in the environment of, say, the 1970s, are now developing it because today's environment somehow makes it easier for that moderate genetic risk to manifest as disease. It points strongly towards gene-environment interactions being key.
That makes a certain kind of sense, but it definitely feels like there are still big question marks. What were the main limitations the researchers acknowledged?
Yeah, definitely. No study's perfect. A key limitation was the lack of really detailed individual-level data for some things. Like, childhood overweight obesity measures weren't available for everyone individually. And they didn't have specific genetic data, like precise HLA genotypes, for the whole massive cohort. That limited their ability to directly test those specific gene-environment interaction hypotheses. They also couldn't distinguish certain infections, like enteroviruses, which are strongly suspected in T1D, from just general infection categories in the registers. And of course, this was all done in Sweden. So while it's a huge and powerful study, we have to be cautious about generalizing these exact findings, the stable heritability, the specific factor contributions to other populations with different genetic backgrounds and environments.
Okay, so given those limitations and this really provocative finding, what's the biggest unanswered question here? What's the most important next step for research?
Well, the clearest message is that there must be other, currently unidentified environmental factors playing a major role, especially factors that are not shared by siblings, because the analysis showed a shared environment explained very little. So we need to look beyond the usual suspects. The most urgent next step, I think, is funding and conducting large-scale studies that collect really comprehensive data. We need individual-level genetics, detailed environmental exposures, maybe looking at viruses, microbiome, diet, chemicals measured prospectively, following kids over time. Only then can we really hope to pinpoint these missing environmental treasures and truly understand how they're interacting with genetic risk to drive this disease. We need to map out that diabetogenic environment.
This really does shift the perspective, doesn't it? It suggests the focus shouldn't just be on the known environmental factors, but really on uncovering the unknowns and understanding how genes in this changing environment interact in ways we're maybe just starting to grasp. It feels like a new chapter for T1D research. So, a wrap up our deep dive today. The key takeaway is that the heritability of childhood onset type 1 diabetes in Sweden stayed remarkably high and stable over 3 decades, even while the number of cases nearly doubled. This strongly implies that the environmental factors we've traditionally focused on, while they might play some role, are not the major drivers behind that dramatic increase. Instead, the evidence points towards a complex interplay, a stable underlying genetic predisposition interacting with still-to-be-identified environmental triggers. And these interactions seem to be lowering the overall threshold needed to develop the disease. It leaves us with a big question. What does this mean for how we approach prevention, how we think about genetic counseling, and crucially, where we hunt for those elusive environmental culprits in the future of type 1 diabetes? This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this analysis, the best way to support Base by Base is to subscribe or follow in your favorite podcast app and leave us a 5-star rating. It only takes a few seconds, but makes a huge difference in helping others discover the show. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, Base by Base.